In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss 8 key takeaways from MicroConf Europe 2016. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 302. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we made. So where this week, sir?
Well, kind of in a little bit of a slump lately. I've been trying to plod through some of the development issues for Bluetick and try and get the product to a point where customers are actually getting value out of it that they need. And there's just technical problems. It's just some of them are just really hard to get through and are taking forever and just way longer than I would have anticipated initially. And it's just a long, slow slog. So it's a little disappointing, but I've had conversations with the people who've been using it, and everything's on the right track. It's going in the right direction. It's just a lot slower than I'd like it to be.
Is this because of technical debt, or is it early scaling issues?
It's a little bit of both. So yeah, some of it's scaling issues because certain things are just a little bit slow on the back end because of the number of messages that I'm storing and what I'm doing with them. And then some early design decisions, for example, one of which was, we're not going to bother storing some of this information because we don't need it. And it turned out that we did. And it's a lot more complicated to shoehorn it in later than it would have been to grab it all up front. So those are the kinds of things that are running into. And it's just like scaling up that amount of data is a lot harder than it seemed to be initially.
Yep. And what do you think you have a couple weeks? Because you don't want to get new customers on when you're doing this, right? You're kind of holding off.
Right. Yeah.
How long do you think that's going to be?
Well, I mean, the things that I'm working on now, I'm kind of in the final phases of testing it. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to do some of that migration and getting some of that data into the system within the next week or so. And then beyond that, it's a matter of going back to people and saying, okay, this is where it is, because there's all this work that needs to be done up front to gather everything. And then there's additional work that needs to be done to display everything. So I'm hoping that in the next week or two, I'll have something that is, I'll say, much further along and can, you know, display information that they need. But it's kind of hard to say, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a long slog, man. I'm sorry to hear that it's going slower than you want it to, especially when it's technical issues. It's like, those are the things that kill me, right? Because it's like, we have one advantage as software people, and it's that we know how to build products, right? But when you run into these things, it always feels like, man, this is just killing me, because you want to get the sales going and you know you should be focusing on marketing and onboarding and getting new people in. And sometimes these things, you just have to take care of them. You know, you can't have the technical debt sneaking in, especially if the app isn't working properly or you can tell it's not going to scale past 50 people or something.
Yeah. And I mean, part of the issue is that I'm also running into like bizarre edge cases that if you think about it and say, okay, well, you know, I'll give you a prime example, like what characters are valid characters in an email address? And you probably think to yourself, well, alphanumeric and then dot, and then the at sign, of course. But then beyond that, there's all these additional characters that you would not even consider could possibly be part of an email address, and they can be. So for example, like slashes, plus signs, equal signs, there's all this other crap that can go in there. And like, according to the RFCs, those are all completely valid characters. And it just sucks to end up running into those things when you just didn't anticipate them.
Yep. Early on, we had to do a little bit of research too. And I think, the nice part about using Ruby is that I think there's a gem that does the validation, and it's a very complex, I'm not sure if it's a regex or just a complex, you know, series of statements, but that's the kind of thing I'd, in that particular case, be on the lookout for, rather than we've tried not to write our own because we're not experts at it. We probably would be now, but we weren't 3.5 years ago when we were building Drip.
Yeah, this isn't for specifically validating that it's a valid email address. I'm already using modules for that. It's more a matter of, to give you prime example, like if a slash appears in an email address, I can't use it in Microsoft's Azure platform as a partition key. So I basically have to apply some sort of transform to it and then use that as the lookup key as opposed to actually using the email address, which is what I had originally planned on doing. And of course, when you run into that after processing several hundred thousand messages, then it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yep, for sure. So on my end, it's been kind of nice. I have, you know, a couple more of the Drip team members have joined me here in Minneapolis. So I was a couple weeks there. It was kind of, I don't know, you know, you're just kind of flying solo. Didn't know anybody at like this first day at a big company and you don't know anybody, but it was really cool. Derek and Anna have since joined me and feel like things are continuing to fall into place. We're hiring now 3 new people for the engineering team, and it continues to be fun. Like, it continues to be a good journey where I'm learning and my team is learning and things are going well and we're growing fast. I mean, our trial count, just like, yeah, probably can't even say say how much it went up, but hundreds and hundreds of percent, you know, many, many X's up from where it was, you know, the week before closing. So it's been a fun ride, and it's been interesting to watch the app scale, you know, and to watch which things start to creak and kind of teeter. And then we have to jump in and say, all right, we need to, you know, increase these boxes, or we need to increase RAM on this box, or we need to rewrite this one piece. And so we've been doing that, but fingers crossed, knock on wood, we haven't seen any major scaling issues to date. So that's been really nice.
Awesome. So what are we talking about today?
Well, today we're talking about 8 key takeaways from MicroConf Europe 2016. We ran MicroConf Europe just a couple weeks ago in Barcelona. We had about 110 attendees, so it was a little smaller this year than last year. And before we dive into these, I want to refer folks to microconfeuroperecap.com if you're interested in detailed notes on each of the talks. But we had 9 talks, and then we had some other attendee talks and a panel and some other stuff. And Christoph Engelhardt once again volunteered to take notes for us, and those are at microconfeuroperecap.com. They're very detailed and very good. So what you and I did is we sat down and we said, you know, what were kind of some of the key takeaways? These are not all of the takeaways for sure. I mean, there were people taking pages and pages of notes. So these are just some things that kind of struck out to you and I as we talked through the 2 days of speakers. So our first takeaway is to be prepared to rewrite your MVP. And this one is from Jordan Gall, who did a talk called 2 Years in the SaaS Trenches, where he walked through his experience starting Carthook, where he walked through his experience of the last 2 years of launching and growing Carthook and finding a co-founder and, you know, partnership catastrophes with external companies and just his perseverance, what it's taken to get there. And a big lesson that he said was, if you build an MVP, be prepared to rewrite it.
Yeah. And I thought that was a very telling and probably an eye-opening piece of advice, just because when you're building something, you try and build it with the future in mind so that things aren't going to fall over and break as soon as you add 1 or 10 or 20 customers onto it. And you can't always predict what's going to happen at that point. I think Gabriel Weinberg of DuckDuckGo had mentioned this in the past as well. It's like, if you 10X what you're doing, the problems that you're going to run into are just exponentially more than what you had previously anticipated in whatever previous rewrite you had done or re-engineering. And you're always going to run into those scaling issues at some point along the way that you have to rewrite a bunch of stuff, which kind of sucks, but it's in a way a good problem to have if you're getting to that point.
Yeah. Whenever I hear people say MVP, I wonder in my head, do you mean a crappy version that has a lot of technical debt? Because if that's what they mean, that scares me a little bit. When I think of like the MVP of Drip that we launched, it was the code, the underlying code was good, and the architecture was solid, and we had test coverage. And I mean, it was a solidly engineered software product, but it didn't have a ton of features, right? So that's what I think of as like minimally viable in that instance. And obviously an MVP it doesn't even necessarily need to be software, even if you're going to start a software company. We've talked about that, how you can do human automation, and there's all kinds of ways to work around having to not build software basically for it. But if in fact you are building a software product for something, I don't think I could move forward with it as something that has a bunch of technical debt, because it's going to come back to bite you at some point, right? Because if you do your MVP, get 10, 20, 30 customers, what do you do now? Do you take 6 months to rewrite it? You're just standing still. Like, that's no fun. You know, think twice about what you're doing and how you're doing this. Our second takeaway is to brute force sales in the early days. And this also comes from Jordan, who in essence had a virtual assistant that was going out and looking for possible clients of Carthook, and then doing cold email sequences, and then just talking on the phone. I mean, it really just, it's just brute force, right? It's just perseverance, just coming in every day, doing the slog, doing the grind. And I think he said that got him to maybe, it was around 5K in MRR. And that's like super admirable, you know, just clawing your way, because he didn't really have an audience. He didn't really have a list he could go to. And he just showed up every day and did the stuff that a lot of other people aren't willing to do.
Yeah, and a lot of those types of things are going out and writing cold emails or scraping lists together from different websites that you think would be a good target. And that's actually one of the strategies that I've seen recommended to people to get to your first 100 customers is go out and create a list of who you think your best or flagship customers would be for your top 25 or top 50 customers and people that you would want to do business with. And then iterate through them and talk to those people and see if you can get them onboarded as customers. And if you can, then it will help you build the roadmap for the future in terms of how to get in front of more of those types of people. But just showing up and doing the work is, I'll say, highly underrated.
Our third takeaway is, if you're not getting initial traction during customer development, you may just have things completely wrong. The advice to talk to more customers may not be correct. And this is a takeaway that we pulled out of your talk, which is called Drawing the Line Between Success and Failure, where you did the kind of the survey or the mini research study where you asked bootstrappers specifically about products that they had either failed to launch or launched and then had either failed or succeeded after launch. And you looked at the data and you analyzed it and you showed your findings.
Yeah, and I think that one of the hard things about the data that I had was there's not enough data to begin with, especially in the bootstrapping and self-funded space. But some of the things that I really wanted to zero in on were edge cases where you could see clearly defined lines between the maximum amount of time that successful companies spent doing customer development and then the average time, for example, or the minimum time that companies that were not successful did. And you could see very clearly that the maximum amount of time was, I think it was about 10 or 12 hours of customer development for the successful ones. And then there were some people who did upwards of 50 or 100 or even 200 hours of customer development. And the reality is that in looking through that data and kind of picking through all of the things that I found, what I came to realize was that there's people who can get themselves into a situation where they're not sure what they should do. They think that they don't have a clear picture or a clear understanding, but they want an idea to work. So they'll keep talking to people in an effort to try and make it work. And that is essentially you're deluding yourself into thinking that that strategy is going to work, because just talking to more people will get you more people to say yes, but it is also kind of shows you how difficult it's going to be in the long run to get more people on board. And if you can't convince people who are in your network, who are very likely the people that you're talking to first, if you can't convince them that your idea is something that is going to provide business value, what chance do you have from an anonymous web page where people who have no idea who you are coming to it and are trying to evaluate it?
Right. And I think in the long term, you want to increase the number of survey respondents. I think you had about 55 or 60 at the time you presented it there. But it would be nice if, you know, some more people would submit their stuff so that you can increase the accuracy of the statistics you're running. So perhaps we could link that up in the show notes. And if you're interested in providing your data, it can be anonymous or not. It's up to you. Then Mike can maybe revise that in a future talk or blog post. Our fourth takeaway was to find out what people want. Go get it. Give it to them and do it in that order. This was from James Kennedy's talk titled Zero to 20K MRR in 20 Easy Steps, the story of rubberstamp.io. And the title was a little bit facetious because the easy was in quotes. It was 20 really hard steps, and it took a long time to get 20K MRR, which made it for a great story. And one of the pivotal moments of it was when he read, do you remember what the guy's name was?
I don't remember the specific book.
Yep, but he read a book and it says the instructions were to find out what people want, go get it and give it to them. And he was trying to do that, but he was failing. And in the end, he realized that you have to do it in that specific order.
It might have been the book called Instant Cash Flow by Bradley Sugars.
Yes, that's the book. And actually, it's in Christoph's notes as I think you were secretly looking at while I was fumbling around for the name. So, you know, one of the other things I liked about James's talk is he just had a lot of really actionable stuff. I mean, he's attended several microconfs, and so he knows the level of talk you kind of want to bring. And he talked about some really cool marketing approaches that other people haven't tried. There was like softwareadvice.com, there was Capterra, I'm trying to think of what else there were, but he just had several things that really are kind of off the beaten path that he has used and optimized in order to grow his business.
The other thing I liked about his talk is that he really laid out in a manner that was very systematic about what his approach was to identifying those different channels. And I specifically asked him about that at MicroConf. What was it that made him decide to go after Capterra and those other things? And he said he went out and had read the book called Traction by Gabriel Weinberg and Justin Maris, and in it, it lays out the bullseye approach. And we've had Gabriel on the show before talking specifically about that book and about that approach. And they just went through it and they were very systematic about it and said, what's working, what isn't, what do we think has the best chances? And that's how they identified that those different channels were going to work for them. Because if you look at the channels that they are using that are being successful for them, they aren't things that you'd think of off the top of your head. So I was really interested to hear about how he stumbled across those. And he's like, we just systematically went through that and used the information that we had to identify which one was going to work. And when they didn't have enough data, they went out and got the data.
I also like that he referenced Jason Cohen's talk from MicroConf. I think it was 2012 or 2013. And I mean, he's been attending MicroConfs and basically like didn't have a business and started a small one and then learned from MicroConf and grew it and then later shut that one down and then started another one. And I mean, really, he's just learned so much from the community and from the talks that it was cool to see him reference that, you know, and to call it out now. And now he's a main stage MicroConf speaker talking about his road of getting to 20K MRR. That's the fun stuff. If you're listening to this and you have not watched Jason Cohen's talk, I think it's called Building the Ideal Bootstrap Business or something like that. It's linked to from the MicroConf website, or you can find it on Vimeo. In my opinion, it is the best bootstrapped talk ever, like in the history of bootstrapped talks. He just rocks it out of the park. And I remember as he was giving it, I was thinking, my head is exploding. Like, this is completely rocking my world. And then every year since then, I try to rewatch it just to remind myself and to relearn and to pick up new things. And it is just, it's brilliantly written and executed. I don't know if anyone's going to ever outdo that talk, because it was so phenomenal. Our fifth takeaway is to constantly ask yourself, why are you doing this? Reevaluate your core values, as they may not be etched in stone and they might change. And this comes from my talk, which I titled 11 Years to Overnight Success, From Beach Towels to Successful Exit. And the idea here is, you know, I really talked through the decision process of deciding to sell Drip and how that all went down. And there's a lot of thought process to it. But one of the key threads that kept coming up for me as I, you know, I look back and I thought, what did happen here throughout this career? And I went all the way back. I mean, I started launching products in 2000. But I really didn't have my first dollar of revenue until 2005. So I kind of included, that's really the last, you know, 11 years. And I look back and I thought, what are the things that like were my core values? Why was I doing this at all? Why didn't I stay a salaried employee? And so I talked through that I wanted freedom, that I wanted to have purpose, and that I wanted strong relationships. And freedom, purpose, and relationships were these three things that I'd originally heard. It's a psychological concept from years back. I heard it on a podcast years ago, and I've really just taken it to heart, and it's been something I've come back to. And throughout this journey, as I've wandered off that path, like as I've given up some of my freedom, given up some of my purpose, hurt my relationships because I, you know, work too much or overcommitted, I've always had to come back to that center line of making a change. And so that really was the story. And in the end, by the way, I added a fourth one, which had never been on my radar, which was stability. Because, you know, having a lot of products, or having a product that can easily be taken away from you when you're paying your mortgage from it and your entire income comes from that had a few scares, right, over the years. Where, you know, Hittail almost got creamed by Google and other things like that. And I realized that having that stability was an important thing, which of course factored into this decision.
I think what really stood out for me from your talk was the fact that you kept going back to those core values, but at the end of the day, you also realized that those core values can change over time. The values that you have when you're 25, for example, and not married and no kids, those will change over time. And as you hit 35 and 45 and get older, your priorities change. The things that you want and need in life are going to be different than they were earlier in life. And I think that it was interesting to see that kind of verbalized, because it wasn't something I'd necessarily really given a lot of consideration to before.
Our sixth takeaway requires a little explanation. Okay, so if you've seen the movie Glengarry Glen Ross, Alec Baldwin is like a sales manager, and he uses this expression or this phrase, ABC, always be closing. And so our sixth takeaway is ABFU, always be following up. And this, of course, comes from Stelly Efti. He did his talk called Building and Optimizing Your First Sales Process. And if you've heard Stelly talk, he's a very engaging speaker. He gets really riled up on stage in a positive way that just keeps you captivated. So he went first on the second day, right? He's the perfect post-lunch or first in the day slot, because everybody's trying to wake up and he gets them going. And so his message, there were a lot of messages, but one of his messages was always be following up. And we have abbreviated that. Maybe Stelly can take that and use it. I like it. ABFU.
One of the things I liked about Sully's talk was that he gave a bunch of sales metrics that people should be using to help establish whether or not they're doing the right activities or they've got the right quality metrics for their sales that they're looking at. So, for example, if you're trying to reach out to people and put them into your sales funnel, you should ideally be reaching at least a 15% reach rate. And ideally, you'd get to 30, but for every 100 calls you make, you reach at least 15 people. Ideally, you get to 30. So you need to adjust the things that you're doing around that in order to make sure that you're meeting the right metrics. It's not just enough to call 100 people. You need to be also reaching them as well. And then he also talked about, you know, some of the different conversion metrics and hiring people, you know, making sure that you're hiring the right types of people, making sure that the sales are also founder driven. And you need to do sales yourself in the very beginning stages of the company to make sure that you're selling to the right people and identifying the right prospects that you should be talking to. It's very difficult to bring in a sales sales rep from outside the company and then just plop them down in a chair and say, okay, start selling, because you haven't figured out a process. You haven't figured out who it is that you should be talking to. So that sort of thing really can't be outsourced. It's very difficult to just plop somebody in and expect them to be the entrepreneur, because I think a lot of developers, their natural inclination is to kind of step back from that and say, okay, I need to hire a sales rep to do the sales thing for me. When the reality is that the developer is probably going to be the best person for that job because they understand all the different pieces that are in it. They may be very, very uncomfortable, but they understand all the things that go into it. And I've actually been in conversations where people will tell me flat out, like, hey, I actually trust a lot of what you're telling me because you're coming at it from an engineering standpoint. You're not coming at me as a sales rep. So when you're talking at the technical levels about the specific challenges that you're solving, don't sell yourself short. You can easily overcome your own uncomfortability about that and come across to somebody as much more trustworthy just by virtue of the fact that you're a little bit more technical and a little less salesy.
Our seventh takeaway is to be deliberate about your direction once you've had early success with a product. And this came from Jana Bastow, who talked about the power of product focus. She basically talked about how early success makes things complicated, because once you have 10 or 20K in MRR, you really have a lot of options. You can go in a lot of directions. And if you try to follow all of those threads, it can be a pretty dangerous time for your business, because you can just kind of wander off the reservation and not being focused on the product. She showed from like firsthand experience how it had them kind of just wandering around and you know, and it hurt growth in the end.
I think one of the most interesting things about her talk was that she had graphs that showed what some of their different cohorts looked like. And you could see over time, as they focused in on the user acquisition process and trying to get people from trial to paid, you could very clearly see in the graphs exactly where changes were happening and how they were moving people to make those decisions earlier in the process. Whereas previous to that, they weren't focused on that. They weren't concentrating on it because they were trying all these different things. They didn't necessarily have set goals and specific things that they were trying to accomplish. They had money coming in the door and they were trying a bunch of different things, but they didn't really have a plan. But once they stepped back and said, okay, let's make a plan, let's do these things and be very deliberate about them, you could see very clearly how well it impacted the business.
And our eighth and final takeaway for MicroConf Europe 2016 is to focus on retention instead of acquisition. And this came from Drew Sinaki in his talk, Double Your Business. It had a long subtitle, but it was just about doubling your business. And what he walked through was there's really only three ways to increase revenue. It's to increase your average revenue per user, to decrease churn, or to increase the number of customers you have. And he said, if you do all three of them, they're multiplicative, right? So if you do one of them, you get a 30% rise. But if you do all three of them, they multiply times each other and it becomes exponentially. It's like a 2.2 times growth, just getting a 0.3 increase in each of them. I think that's what the numbers are. And you know, what I liked is he pointed out how most people focus on the third one. They focus on, we just see more customers. But if you're not increasing that average revenue per user and decreasing churn along the way, you're leaving a ton of money on the table. And then he walked through specific ways that he has done that. Both talked about doing it in an e-commerce site, talked about doing it with SaaS apps, because he does some marketing consulting for teamwork.com. And it was, you know, overall, it was a good talk.
What I liked about his talk was that he showed how those three things were applicable to different types of businesses. So one of the examples that kind of sticks out in my mind was when somebody was going through in the e-commerce business, they offered an upsell. And it wasn't very much, but at the same time, there was a certain percentage of people who purchased that upsell. And I forget what it was. It was like an extra t-shirt for $10 or $15. But they got a significant and measurable increase in the number of sales, which impacts the bottom line. And all it took was them to add in that extra page and that extra offer for the person who was making the purchase. And it was just fascinating to see how all those little things ended up adding so much to the bottom line for the business.
And so I think to, you know, start wrapping us up, if you attended, it was great to see you. Thanks for coming. If you're interested in attending either of our MicroConfs in Las Vegas or in Europe, come to microconf.com and enter your email address. We also want to thank our sponsors. I mean, frankly, MicroConf really runs on the energy from the attendees and the help from our sponsors. So this year we had five sponsors of MicroConf Europe: teamwork.com, Qualaroo, Balsamic, LeadFuse, and of course, Drip. So we've been getting some questions via email about our MicroConf in Vegas next year. We mentioned it briefly in episode 300, kind of gave a teaser, right, and didn't go into too much detail. But in essence, we are having the MicroConf we've had in Las Vegas on Monday and Tuesday for the past, what, 5-6 years? We're having that again this year on April 10th and 11th, of course, with an evening event the Sunday night before that on the 9th. Then we're having really a separate conference. It's called MicroConf Starter Edition. And this is for folks who are in more of an early stage. So maybe if you are looking for an idea, you have an idea, you're not yet launched. Even if you're launched and still just trying to find product market fit, MicroConf Starter Edition is going to be totally geared at idea validation, early traction, getting the first 10 or first 100 customers. Because some feedback we've gotten over the years is a lot of MicroConf attendees and speakers have progressed to a point where we've started thinking about, you know, maybe larger problems and we have new challenges. So, you know, you think about me when we first started, what, MicroConf in 2011, I hadn't even acquired Hittail. Like, I still had a bunch of little businesses doing a few grand a month and then bought Hittail, grew that, then started Drip, 10 employees, you know, that whole thing. Like, I'm just at a different place. And there are a lot of folks who are in my shoes who have gone from zero to businesses that are doing 50K, 100K a month. And when you're running a seven-figure business, you just have different interests. And so hearing from Des Trainer from Intercom or hearing from Patrick Collison, the founder of Stripe, it makes more sense at that point. But if you're in an early stage, then you actually want to hear different content. It's more helpful to hear about idea validation and maybe to hear about folks who are in the early stages or to have someone come on and just talk about business ideas rather than you've already launched and here's what you're doing and what to do with your millions of dollars in revenue and that kind of stuff. So that's the idea here is it's two separate conferences aimed at the different stages of what bootstrap startup founders are facing.
And I think if you think about MicroConf in a larger sense, that makes sense because over time, the attendees themselves are going to evolve with their businesses. And not everybody's going to want to grow their business to multiple employees, you know, tens or hundreds or whatever. But there are going to be people who still have those challenges. And, you know, maybe they've never heard of MicroConf before, or they've never had a chance to go because they've never felt like they were in a position to really take advantage of it. So this is kind of our attempt to make sure that we are still catering to the needs of the audience and making sure that we're able to deliver what it is that they want and need out of the conference. But at the same time, we're also trying to address the fact that over time, people are going to have those different phases of their business. And maybe it makes more sense to have these two different conferences that people can go to based on the stage or the evolution of their existing business.
Right. And I think we've gotten the question, why wouldn't I just attend both of them? And I think my answer is, if you want to, that's fine. Like, I actually think that depending on your stage, you're going to get a lot more out of one of these conferences than the other. But if you wanted to attend both, I don't see why you shouldn't. This is also an opportunity for us to allow more people to attend a MicroConf. Once we launch to the public, we sell out in 5 minutes. And we haven't wanted to grow the conference to 450 people or whatever. But if we run these two conferences back to back, we can get people at, you know, based on their stage, we can offer them the most amount of value that really helps them where they're at. And it also allows us to, you know, if we do whatever, 200, 225 per conference, then we can have around 450 people getting help and value and learning out of MicroConf without having just this massive conference of people wandering around and feeling like, let's say you had 450 people and it's all stages, then when you walk around, you're going to talk to a bunch of people who are still validating ideas. And that feels, if you're already doing seven figures, it feels kind of weird. It's like, well, what do we have to talk about, right? Whereas if we segment this and we have the standard MicroConf and then MicroConf Starter Edition, you're just going to run into more people who are doing exactly what you are. And that's always been the point and purpose of MicroConf. So if this sounds interesting, either MicroConf or MicroConf Starter Edition, come to microconf.com and enter your email address and you'll be the first to hear about it when we sell tickets.
Well, I think that about wraps us up for the day. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690, or you can email it to us at questions@startupstherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupstherestofus.com for full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.